Hey, everybody, welcome back to the Husky Fan Podcast. It's almost here to preview the game. Jimmy, as always, we also got Tech here, our resident expert on many things, if not everything.
That's the
Jimmy,
nicest intro I've ever had.
All true. Jimmy the gent, I should say.
Yeah, yes.
How you feeling, brother?
Feeling great, buddy. I booked my flight today. I'm all in. I'm headed down to New Orleans. I couldn't be more pumped for this Monday night game. Couldn't be more jacked up. I mean, it's LFG time.
Yeah.
You Tech. Sound pumped.
No, I mean, I'm I just got it. Yeah, I've been running, because we're flying out tomorrow. I've been running around trying to get things done today, and one of my tires blew out. So,
of course.
But yeah, that's my sob story. But no, today was like a get shit done day, get ready. But the last couple, I mean, I've just been, consuming content and just getting really fired up and really pumped up. I'll get back in that mode in time, maybe in a minute or two. But
yes.
I've been reading a lot, reading a lot as far as the people I trust, their analysis and opinions, including Tech, and we'll get into a lot of that. But Jimmy, just to go back to you first, we got to feel pretty good about this matchup. I don't know. It seems really similar to the Pac-12 championship game. Everybody's still doubting Washington. Everybody's crowning our opponent. They're already talking about how they're the best team in the Final Four. They can win the whole thing. Our team is perfectly healthy. They got a massive chip on their shoulder now, according to Softy. You never know what's going to happen in these games, but I feel pretty good about it.
Well, what's also on top of all of that, small comments by the Husky players have turned the burnt orange into these rabid freak shows. And Byron Murphy, he's on Twitter talking about how Dylan Johnson, all he said was, I've played in the SEC, I've played Bama, I've played Georgia, I'm ready for Sweat. And their D-line. I mean, and it's like, we'll see you at 7:45. And all these fans are like, well, why would Washington say this with the talent gap already so wide? It's like, he didn't really say anything. And Penix just says he doesn't remember anything about the game from last year other than winning. I'm trying to understand why so many people are offended by these comments. So it's amazing the sensitivity of these fans. And then also, the fact that everyone's crowning Texas, there's a small majority that looks at Washington as the team to beat and has a shot to win the national championship. But it's incredible the disrespect that has continued for this team.
Yeah, Tech, what are your initial thoughts? I know you could pile on there with regards to Texas and just kind of observations about their fan base.
Yeah, I mean, I think back to 2016 and going to Atlanta and playing Bama in their backyard. And, you could convince yourself of if A, B, C, D, E, and F go correctly, you might have a chance to win in the fourth quarter. But realistically, I think anyone that went to that game, anyone that saw that team, and knew that 2016 team, we knew what was going to happen. Like
that,
we
that,
didn't go
that
into that
a,
game.
That Alabama team was a total juggernaut. Like best case scenario, like maybe we lose by a touchdown.
Right.
But that was a total juggernaut. But anyway, I'm sorry, continue.
No. That's exactly right. Whereas I would argue of the three other teams in the playoffs, if you told me I had to pick one to give a month to prepare and play, I would choose Texas. If you told me which team we match up the best against, I would tell you it's Texas. And I don't see the juggernaut that we saw in Alabama in 2016 I don't see the Deshaun Watson that Clemson had that beat Alabama in 2016. I don't see any of those teams out there in the playoffs. And so not only am I quietly confident about what we might be able to do in New Orleans, I am tremendously optimistic at what effectively less than a week of prep for whoever wins the Michigan-Alabama game has for prepping, installing a game plan, et cetera, and then potentially facing us for a title. If you were to, you know, if I was to summon the ghosts of Dennis DeYoung, you know, from 7 years ago, and him and I were to plot what is the ideal situation for Washington to win a national championship, I think what we have in front of us is about as good as it gets in terms of what is possible and what kind of chance that we have 2+ weeks from now to be sitting here talking about another national championship.
Yeah, I mean, this, I was talking with Andrew before the season. We usually get together in the summer at Burger Master, of course, and we talk about the season and how it's going to get. And he was asking me, what's the over under for this year? And like facetiously, I think I said 14 or 30, something like that. But I said, no, I said, this team, I said, I don't care what your metrics say. Like, this team has incredible intangibles. They're incredibly close. This is going to be a really good team. And we both agreed. Like we both pointed out, like there's no juggernaut, and this is a year where you're not going to, like a blue blood, like there's a good chance a blue blood is probably not going to win. I mean, this is what we thought going into the year. Like this is the potential setup. And we both said, maybe we'll get lucky. We make the playoff and we have a chance to actually win it because there's no juggernaut team. So what you're saying, Tech, I mean, I'm not saying it was easy to predict at the beginning of the year, but like this was one of those years where coming into the year, there wasn't like a clear juggernaut team. You know, all blue bloods had flaws. And at the same time, you know, we know like you need, you know, unless you're a recruiting monster or one of those teams, like you need a really good quarterback anyway. But the fact that we have Penix, it's perfectly set up for us. You know, we're not going to have a better shot than this, I would
think. Yeah, a long time ago, Dennis and I and Coker, we all talked about how, you know, if you really set up what's required for Washington to win a national championship, you've got to have these pieces. You've got to have the quarterback. And you've got to have the quarterback that is able to make all the throws and threaten the defense vertically, horizontally, and everywhere in between. You've got to have the receivers that are going to be playing on Sunday that can match up with the best of, you know, whatever you see, whether you're seeing an SEC team, you know, or a blue blood like Michigan or a blue blood like Texas, like, you know, you're going to face somewhere along the line a team that's going to have athletes and dudes that are going to probably play on Sunday. So you better have those dudes. You need to have line play that, not necessarily saying that you have to have better line play than your opposition, but you have to have line play that at least allows you the chance to break even and allow your advantages at quarterback and receiver to really shine through. And if you look at, you know, what we've got arguably the best offensive line in the nation. You know, I mean, obviously you win the Joe Moore Award, so it's easy to say that you have the best, but, you know, regardless of whether you win it or not, you're on the short list for the best offensive line in the country. So I'd say that's a box that's checked. And then on the defensive line standpoint, you've got a guy in Braylon Trice that's going to be a high Sunday draft pick. You got a guy in Thule that has a track record when healthy of being a massive interior disruptor. And you have a guy on the outside in ZTF that has shown the ability throughout his career that while he may not be the most consistent player, he has a knack for making big plays, and those big plays often turn into turnovers. And then the last part of the equation is that you have to have a defense that's opportunistic, that when the opportunities, whether for a stop or turnovers, present themselves, that they have the ability to go do that. And this defense, time after time, shows the ability to do that, to get off the field when they get you behind the chains on third down. The ability to create turnovers, particularly in those type of situations. And then most importantly, when they're in the red zone or faced with a fourth down situation or whatnot, they find a way time after time after time to rise to the occasion and win those key plays that you have to win if you want to win at this level. And this team checks literally every box that's required for a team that doesn't live in Southern Dominance Day country. This is the blueprint for how you beat those teams that are going to be able to recruit better than you. And we've already shown it twice this year, because we all know Oregon, you know, if it's an underwear Olympic, Oregon's going to win that. But they haven't won it the last three times.
Yeah. I mean, Jimmy, what I know you've been really keen on the defense recently.
Well,
two parts for you. One, give me your thoughts on the whole, you know, how you think this team is positioned to actually win a national championship. And then secondly, just your thoughts on the defense, because I know you've been thinking a lot about that and sensing some things in the last couple games, last month or so.
Yeah, I think obviously the storyline of the game, which makes sense, is, you know, you're focusing on Penix, you're focusing on the elite receivers, you know, the best offensive line in the country, a running back that has over 1,000 yards and who has played in the SEC and is healthy. If you saw, he was apparently quite medicated for the Pac-12 championship. I don't know if you saw that article yet, but sounds like his foot is in a much better spot than it was a month ago. But what you mentioned, a guy back in Rice, and, you know, he's quietly had a great year. He hasn't had the sack numbers that he had the prior, but that guy is so damn good. And I don't think the Texas O-line has faced a guy that good. Then of course you have ZTF, who we talked about has gotten a little lean, but I think he's going to present some problems with his quickness. But again, now we didn't talk about the X factor in Durfee. So, I think it was Eric Schmidt talking about, you know, he didn't get the reps of the season that are crucial, like you've talked about, Chess. But imagine the X factor of Durfee and the amount of attention that this team and the coaches have given this guy playing against the best on scout team, against the best O-line, and those linemen saying that pound for pound, he might be the strongest player on the team. On top of that, he has some plays in his tool belt that not even Trice or ZTF have. That's coming from Fatanu. So if we have an additional pressure point that we can bring that hasn't been seen from our defense, and with the fact of, you know, with Fabi Lukonen, I always say his name wrong, but coming on, the Asa, I know someone mentioned he wasn't in the two deeps for this game, but I'd be shocked if he didn't play. I don't know why he wouldn't, unless something has changed in his health that we're not aware of. In the point of being opportunistic and getting better, like, everyone's pointing to their statistics overall, but there's no denying how good this defense has been playing. And I posed this to that dude, an SEC dog on Hardcore Husky. Tell me, do you want Bo Nix or do you want Ewers? Do you want Troy Franklin or Xavier Worthy? You might have some argument, but that Oregon receiving core, outstanding. You're telling me you want the Texas backfield more than you want Jordan James and Bucky Irvin? No one can tell me they would take that Texas backfield over those two guys.
Particularly considering the injury that they have there, right? Like, if Jordan Brooks was healthy, different then story. Maybe have a different story, but
he's not. He's out for the game. Yep. Right. You know, the fact that, you know, Washington's played very good talent, and Utah's D line statistically was as nearly as good as Texas's D line. I know those are some big boys. They're probably looking at that Arizona State game with that A-gap pressure up the middle. But you don't think Washington knows that's coming? And I think Tech, you mentioned it, with the up-tempo ability of this offense, you're going to tire those guys out. And that's one thing that the Texas fans, some guys that aren't just total idiots that are, you know, can look at the game holistically, were saying that, you know, this team tires later in games. And so if you get sweat and those guys fatigued, where we play our best in the fourth quarter, you know, with 6 or 7 minutes left in the game, we are deadly. So, and well, everybody knows we've won the 20 games. This team is built different in all aspects.
Jimmy Grubb was asked that today in his press conference. Like, well, how are you going to handle the defensive tackles? He's like, we're going to make them run. it's not rocket science. And, you know, like I know Chest will, you know, get into, you know, I'm sure he'll want to talk, you know, offense versus defense, defense versus offense, you know, both sides of the ball and whatnot, and don't want to dive into it too deep. But the thing that like comes up to me all the time when I think about our offense is it doesn't really matter what you want to take away, because we have a counter to whatever it is that you try to take away. If you want to take away the deep shots, we've got plenty of options to be able to beat you underneath. If you want to, you know, bring that A-gap pressure, we have some things that maybe we didn't have in the tool belt come Arizona State at that point. And they're, I mean, I think that's a weird game for a number of different reasons, but whatever. But we have tools that can withstand A-gap pressure now that we maybe didn't have at that point. You know, you want to play press and, you know, fire zone, then we'll take our chance. We'll take our shots and take our chances. You know, like there's a lot of different ways that we can beat you. And I think what's most encouraging to me is that we've seen some different team throughout the course of the year try all these different approaches to try to stop us. And we've largely been very, very successful regardless of what approach a defense has taken against us. And so, you know, I think that the one thing that has proven that it can potentially be an issue for us is actually weather, which we don't have to worry about in this game.
Nice.
Just one follow-up, Tech. I mean, how, because all the hype is about, you know, Texas has this great defensive line. Washington's not, many people are saying, you know, Washington's not going to be able to handle them. I mean, is their defensive line like that much better than Oregon's or the like Utah's or the ones that we've played?
Well, let's have fun with stats, Chest. So just take an Oregon playing Pac-12 games and Texas playing Big 12 games. Oregon gives up 3.1 yards per carry, Texas 2.9. Oregon gives up 6.6 yards per pass attempt and just under 11 yards per completion. Texas at 6.75 per attempt and 11.1 per completion. Completion percentage is almost identical. The run-pass ratio is almost identical. Points per game, almost identical. Point, you know, like everything across the board looks exactly the same. And I think we would all agree that from an, you know, offensive talent standpoint, the Pac-12 was a far more complete and complex league offensively than the Big 12 was this year. And
yeah, just the quarterbacks. I mean,
yeah,
insane.
So if you're telling me going into this game that Oregon has roughly the exact same stats as Texas, has played a better conference schedule than what Texas did, And included within those Oregon numbers are two games against Washington. And we know how that turned out both times. This is not me saying that I'm disrespecting what Texas brings to the table, because, you know, I think we would all agree that, you know, Oregon presented challenges defensively that we had to, you know, work hard and play some of our best football to make sure we won those two games. But this idea that we're going to see something in Texas's defense that we've never seen this year, it's not there. You know, I mean, Texas's schedule, I mean, they played BYU without a quarterback, terrible. Texas Tech at the end of the year didn't have a quarterback. They were terrible. Houston, by and large, was terrible this year. I mean, there are some dog games that Texas played. And, you know, it was not a good year in the Big 12. It just wasn't. And
they haven't, when you look at the matchup, sorry to cut you off, when you look at the matchup and you look at both teams, based on the opponents that both teams have played, I would think that we are much better suited to handle this game. Like, because, you know, we've played a couple good defenses. Like, we've played, you know, we played Caleb Williams, we played Oregon's offense. I don't know who, we played Oregon's offense twice. We played Caleb Williams before they really mailed it in. And if you just look at Texas, like, yeah, the Alabama one was great. I mean, that's fantastic. Although, you know, that Alabama team much worse than the present Alabama team. But aside from that, it doesn't seem like their recent opponents really, like, they're battle tested and will be ready for us.
Yeah, I don't put a lot of stock, like, everybody's talking about, well, they played their two best games of the year, or their last two games. Well, I already mentioned the Tech's terrible. I mean, just destroyed by injuries. And then Oklahoma State isn't horrendous, but, you know, I think 2 or 3 weeks earlier, they lost like 42-3 at UCF. You know, like, they're not great. So, you know, I just have a hard time. Like, I feel like Texas has lived off of that win against Alabama, which is very impressive. But let's also be clear that Alabama in week two is not what Alabama is today. You know, Milroe is a far different and better quarterback, and they use him a lot better than they did 2 weeks into the season. So, you know, and they've been living off of that game as part of their reputation. You know, like, I went back and watched their game against TCU. There's a lot of gaps out there, you know, not only in the passing game, but TCU's running back ran for, I think, 98 yards on like 23 carries or something like that. Like, if you told me right now that Dylan Johnson was like 22 for 100 on Monday, I'd take it. You know, like, I think we'd all take that. We'd all take that. And we'd all probably tell you that we would win the game if that happens. So, you know, like, I've got way too many burnt orange people in my life, and every single one of them to a T is like, well, nobody runs on us and you guys won't run on us and blah, blah. And I'm like, have you watched us play? Do you even understand how we run the football? Do you understand that we're, you know, like, if we run the ball 20 times with Dylan Johnson, we might run 5 times up the middle. Like, we're not going to try to.
I know.
Like,
I know.
That's not what we do.
What are we going to try? We're going to get into a pissing contest with sweat up the middle? Like, what are you talking about?
Like, it's not how we do things. And that's where it's just like, I just kind of look at the whole thing and I'm just like, you know.
And look, I'm not going to get into the details of how I know this and the insight that I have, but I'll tell you that this Texas team, and on the inside, I mean, they are not giving Washington respect. I can tell you that. And it's part of it, I think, is this national narrative. And Washington should be considered the favorite. They should be considered the team to beat. They've won 20 in a row. They've beaten very good teams. And of course, and they have Michael Penix. And a few people have talked to that point. Like, you know, Penix is the best quarterback of the four teams left. And it's true. And watching his presser today, I mean, I love his demeanor.
You can tell he's pissed off.
He's pissed. He's totally pissed. And like he is, I was going to talk about this earlier. He is stone cold killer. And so is Grubb, and so is DeBoer. And and I was telling, I don't know if I mentioned this on the pod, just with you. I think I did. But DeBoer and Penix together have done, obviously, magic here, but they also put together some pretty impressive magic at Indiana, too, when they, you know, came back. I think they were 30 points down against Ohio State, and I think Penix threw for, like, five or six touchdowns. Like, four or five came in the second half. Something crazy. I'm just saying, like,
yeah, I remember that game.
I'm not put in. I had my moments during the season where I was at moments in doubt, but I just it's so hard to look at these two staffs. And now I understand I'm not dialed into Texas's staff like maybe some others aren't. I understand they have some good assistants. We know Quats, you know, he's earned himself a title as a good D coordinator. But are you going to tell me you're going to take the Texas staff over Washington staff in a game like this? That's been overlooked. I think special teams have been overlooked. Our special teams has been so much better this year. And they came up key against Oregon. Bernard is sick. Nada has shown a knack for if we get a kickoff return for him to get, you know, additional yardage. You know, Grady Gross has been solid, but I think from a special teams perspective, that's been looked over. But the fact is, it's Sark versus DeBoer. DeBoer has been in championship football. I don't care if it was in a lower division or not. I mean, if you listen to the New Heitzel interview that was posted on Hardcore, I mean, dude, that was so insightful. And then also New Heitzel talking about how Washington lines up the receivers where they put corners in run fit positions. So they're going to cause a lot of problems for Texas that they just haven't seen. And they're going to have their best safety out the first two quarters of the game. And look, I think Sark will probably have a good stretch of plays. What I noticed on that Houston game, Tech, I watched the highlights. It was abbreviated version of the game.
Yeah.
They came out on fire, like boom, boom, boom.
But that's what they do every game.
Then they hit a stall point.
And they do that every game.
So we're gonna have to weather some plays. I get that. Like they're here for a reason. You know, they're good. They've only lost one game. But the fact is, it looks like they have these moments, these big moments of lulls, and also Hewers can be inconsistent. And you know, he's injury prone. I mean, I'm not wishing for injuries. I don't want anyone getting hurt. I certainly don't want there to be injuries, but I mean, I think, you know, I think Washington's is gonna get some shots on Ewers in this game. I do see that. Now, when they say they're gonna get pressure on Penix, part of you know the O line being so good is that Penix is so good with the ball. He doesn't hang on to the ball much, and we might see a more mobile Penix in this game than we've seen ever. I don't know. Maybe that's possible, but the fact is that Penix can move. He doesn't take shots. He's played against big defensive lines. If I'm looking at Texas, man, their confidence and their cockiness, you know, that can come bite you in the ass, just like Oregon. Everyone was kissing their ass for weeks, and then they got punched in the mouth and they were stunned. And what do? We went up big.
And just Chester, quickly, Jim,
go for it, Chester.
But Jimmy, we mentioned that before the Pac-12 championship game, that Penix is probably going to need to run just like two or three times, just to sneak it in there. And I think we could probably see that this game too.
Absolutely.
But anyway,
there's nothing to hold back. Ahead. Yeah. You know, it's funny, Chess, like of all the things you said, number one, all the Texas stuff that I've been listening to, they think they have a decided edge on us in special teams. Decided edge.
Hmm.
The only thing that gives me any pause whatsoever on our special teams is punting, just because McAllister can be a little on the slow side. But that being said, how often are we going to actually punt? So, you know, it's like, Yeah, it could be an issue, but like that's the only part. Like if we want to talk kick coverage, I'll take up my chances. If we want to talk about return game, I'll take my chances. Gross has proven to be pretty reliable. I'll take my chances. Like, yeah, okay, cool. They've got a nice punter. They've got a nice field goal kicker. Like, that's great.
Garrett top.
Yeah, like, great. Garrett. Awesome.
Their kicker's the son of Carrot Top, right?
Yeah. Burt Auburn or something like that, or you know, like some weird name. Second, when the matchup got announced, Jimmy, I went and knelt before the grave of Dennis DeYoung. Mm-hmm. And it was like, wow, that's as good of a matchup as we could hope for. And the ghost of Dennis DeYoung's response back to me was, Sark with a month to get in his own head. What could go wrong? You know, I mean, he's going to have too much time to overanalyze. He's going to have too much time to outthink himself. And I saw an interview where he was saying that, like, he might see something in a bowl game the night before, get an idea, and install it going into the game.
Mm.
Like, cool.
No.
Go for it.
Like, yeah, throw something in there.
You know, just keep doing that stuff. And then the last thing is, like, you know, I think anyone that knows me knows my disdain for Oregon and my disdain for Baylor. Normally, I don't say too much about Texas because, frankly, they've been god-awful for the last 10-plus years. And I just laugh at the fact that, you know, for all the advantages that Texas has, TCU just kicks our ass routinely. We always make fun of Oregon because of how much of a front-running program they are. I'm not sure there is a more arrogant front-running program out there than Texas. When Texas thinks that they are good, their fan base can be as obnoxious as anybody I've ever seen. They think that when they're good, nobody is better. Well, outside of Vince Young having a superhuman day, they largely haven't won shit. Going back to like Earl Campbell, you know, they had like their conference title this year in the Big 12. Now, this is the Big 12 we're talking about, which has historically been Oklahoma and a bunch of schools that have like half the resources that Texas has. Like, it's their first Big 12 title since, I think, 2009. So, like, let's be realistic here. What Texas really is like, they're basically USC. They have all the advantages in the world.
Mm-hmm.
But perpetually, they underachieve more than anybody else, or at, you know, a level at, you know, like, you don't want to be there. And then, like SC, when they think they're good, it normally comes crashing down because it's built on quicksand. You know, it's not sustainable. You know, like, I hear people tell me, well, the culture at Texas, I'm like, okay, like, you know, kudos to Sark for, you know, turning his life around. You know, I'm happy for him for that. But really, we're gonna talk about Sark as the, you know, bastion of
God,
culture and leadership? Like,
insane.
Fuck no. Like, fuck that. No way. Like, you're gonna tell me that that's like, I'm supposed to buy into Sark having his team in a spot better prepared to play than a coach that in his career is 103-11. Like, forget all the other, like, matchups during the game. The biggest mismatch is Kalen DeBoer that just simply knows how to fucking win games against Sark that throughout his entire career has only proven one thing, and that's that he gets in his own way more often than not. But I'm supposed to believe in this game that Sark's going to have the perfect play calls. He's going to have the perfect script. He's going to have his team dialed up. They're not going to have a lull. I mean, they are going to execute perfectly.
You know, not it's in his head. It. You know, it. You know, it's in his head. He's playing Washington too. It's
1,000%.
1,000%. I mean, he can't not think about his past and that stretch of time in his life. And I won't be shy. And we've piled on the guy for so many years, but I'll never have grace for him ever in my lifetime till I die. I'll never have grace for that man ever.
Well, and let's be honest, Jimmy, like when ever. He melted down at SC, he probably eventually melts down. He melted down because he lost to Washington.
That's like, right. That's when all the that's
when everything. That was his last game, I believe. At SC was when
it
he won.
Yeah, it was.
You know, like if that was, you know, anybody else, like he might melt down at the end of the season or somewhere else, but losing on national TV to a true freshman quarterback or whatever we had.
Weren't they off a bye too?
Yeah. Like, you know, like that was not a great Washington team.
No.
But we beat him. And meltdown commenced. You know, I think if I remember right, that was like Browning was it was all of our freshmen.
Yeah.
Can I pause real quick? I just want to mention Arizona absolutely smashed Oklahoma in the last 10 minutes of the game. I mean, obliterated their ass. Smashed their quarterback, sack, fumble, drop touchdowns on them, just kicked the shit out of them, 38-24. I'm not going to lie. I like Arizona. I liked them this year. Fun team to watch. I'm rooting for them. Kind of nice to see them. They just pushed Oklahoma's shit in just in the last 10 minutes of the game. Unbelievable.
That
road graded their ass.
That win's looking better and better.
Yeah. I mean, they are a legit Big 12 title contender next year. And it would not shock me at all, depending on how, you know, they're able to manage the next however months in the portal. Like, they are a legit 12-team playoff contender next year. No question in my mind.
Well, let's keep that trend going.
It's too bad that, you know, the conference is dead. I mean, they could, you know, they could have been a, you know, favorite next year, perhaps.
Well, you know, what's interesting is where Arizona was giving Oklahoma a ton of, there was that twist pressure up the middle, like the D line's off the edge, but then he stunts over to the middle and comes right into the quarterback. That's, you know, we're known for a little of that action. Nice to see that getting blown up a Oklahoma team that beat Texas. Now, obviously, Oklahoma didn't have Gabriel tonight, but that kid was pretty good. That backup played pretty well, even though they had 6 turnovers in the game. But
that's also a testament to Arizona, though, right? Like,
for sure.
Found a kid first start. I mean, you're going to expect mistakes, but not 6 of them.
No. So, you know, we should probably discuss some of the things that, you know, do scare you about this game.
Yeah. You know, which side of the ball do you want to start on?
Well, look, you know, you want to, maybe we should talk a little about Ewers. What concerns you about Ewers?
What concerns me with Ewers is he does have a good arm. He does, you know, unlike, you know, if let's say we go back to where we were comparing, you know, Ewers to Bo Nix. You know, I think what's a little on the scary side is that, you know, Ewers has better arm strength and.
Yeah.
They will take shots down the field. Whereas against Oregon, I think, you know, we were able to maybe get away with planting our heels at times and try and take things away. Now that said, go ahead.
Just one thing, Butterfinger's worthy. I know they're saying, well, he doesn't have a hand injury, but the guy, he had an ankle injury. He was on crutches less than a month ago. A guy like that with that speed, no way that guy's going to be 100% for the game.
Probably not, but I'm going to assume he is until he proves me wrong.
He did. I mean, he suited up. He said they said he was getting back healthy. He's expected to play. We don't know. Is he 80%? Is he 90%? Is he 50%? We don't know.
And normally on injuries of like what he had, straight line speed, he's going to be probably fine with. It's going to be more the cutting and
twists and the turns.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, but remember, not saying J-Mac had the same injury, but I mean, it took him what, like 3 games to get back?
J-Mac felt like way longer than that. He didn't play.
He was like out effectively 6 weeks.
Yeah,
right. But I was just thinking from the point when they said, "Oh, he's full go." Then even after that point, it took him
a couple weeks to get up to speed. Yeah.
So,
one thing, and I don't know if this critique holds merit, but from the very little that I know, it seems to me it does. He's more of like a speed guy than a football player, and it's with speed, right? He's fragile, and it comes off that way a little bit. And, he had a tough game against us last year.
I would say, Jimmy, what they try to do with him is obviously take shots.
Yeah.
And then a lot of the other stuff they do is really kind of working out of the RPO game and wide receiver screens and, things to kind of get the ball into his hands and give him a chance to break some tackles and whatnot. To your point, I don't really see like the 15-yard in and
they're going to hit
the route tree that we run, right? Like, I don't see that out of him.
I mean, do we have to worry about him as a runner? Like with Knicks, we had the concern of the dual threat. Like he's not going to present, that running threat that
absolutely
that
Knicks not
presented, which I think should go in our favor.
It should. The thing that they do pretty well, they do the RPO game pretty well. So we'll have to kind of be on point there. And then the byproduct of it, if you're trying to jump the RPOs, then that's maybe where they run play action and go deep. I think we all know that, if we can take shots at Sark's play calling here and there, and it really shows up in the red zone. Anyway, that follows Washington, particularly when Sark was here, has plenty of good memories of that.
Statistically, Texas struggles at finishing drives.
Yeah, and I think part of it is just, I think that's where, number one, Sark kind of overthinks himself. But I think, two, it really highlights some of the limitations of Ewers. And by that, what I mean is that I think Ewers is actually really good when you dumb down, like, this is my read, right? So, like, if you bring pressure on him, where it's one-on-one and he just is like, okay, I'm going to go to this guy, he's great. But if you sit back and let's say you're rushing 3 and he's having to, try to pick the spot and throw on time into his own coverage, it can look a little ugly at times. And so,
what about the run game, Tech? Because a couple people said there's no drop off from Brooks. Like, Texas fans will tell you that, but I would
call bullshit on that.
There's no way. There's absolutely no way. When you look at Brooks' run and then you look at their 2 other guys that'll be featured in this game, they are not at Brooks' level. I watched a fair amount of Brooks' highlights and plays earlier. Dude, that guy's good. I mean, there's no argument.
No.
He would definitely be a game changer. But those 2 other guys are not Brooks.
No, it's funny because I think if you go back to last year, Brooks was probably in the spot where these guys are this year. But when you get a full off season of reps and you get 200 carries that you have this year and whatnot, your vision improves and your knowledge of, whether to run at full speed and how you set up blocks and, all the nuance of actually playing running back get better. Whereas what I see with these guys is like, they're going to get you what's there, but I don't necessarily see these guys as, guys that are, going to show the the nuance of playing the position per se. They run a lot of counter. They run a lot of what I would probably term slow developing run plays. I think their offensive line is big, but not necessarily mobile.
Yeah.
I don't necessarily see when I watch them getting great push. It's more of like when they break runs, it's either, you know, they're able to get a crease because of their size, or, you know, it's kind of something where they're able to get outside. Like Brooks is able to make a cut to the outside, you know, out of that type of situation. And then, you know, they can out athlete people. I think their run game's decent, but I don't know if I would like, I think Oregon's run game when it's humming is more devastating to me.
I'm taking Jordan James and Buck Irving over there, too, guys. I just don't even think
well, particularly without Brooks.
Without Brooks. This negation of Brooks.
I would say the thing that probably gives me the most pause is if they leverage their tight end.
He's good.
And it, in theory, is against, it matches up against our linebackers in theory, and that's probably not our best avenue for success. So I'll be interested to see if maybe, you know, we try to get Hampton on him a little bit. I could see, you know, it seems like we've been dropping a safety lower into like robber positions more the second half of the year. Like we definitely did that against Utah in the second half, and that really kind of throttled their passing game. So I'd be interested to see that. Their second tight, they run a lot of two tight end sets, but they don't really throw to their second tight end at all.
Yeah, their tight end's good. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah, they're the first guy. The second guy's more of a blocker. And then on the other guy that we didn't talk about on the outside, A.D. Mitchell.
Yeah.
Solid receiver, but his, where he gets you more is like, he is their primary red zone receiving threat. So they probably are going to use, you know, or want to use Worthy more, between the 20s of the two. But once you get into the red zone, it goes heavily over to Mitchell in terms of their usage. And I think that's one of the things that if you're game planning against Sark, you know, I think one of the things that we probably always paid attention to when he was here, you know, Sark's like the 12-year-old playing Madden that's keeping his own stats, you know, and he's trying to get his favorite people certain stats, right? Like, you know, I want to get my quarterback 300 yards. I want to get my running back 100 yards. I want to get this guy touches, and I want to get this guy touchdowns. And it's always interesting to me when I hear, well, Sark self scouts and he doesn't have tendencies. And I'm like, that's bullshit. Like, you know, like any of us, like if we watch their games, they're like their motions. Like once you see the motion, you're like, well, it's either this play or that play. Like,
right. No, like, we could,
they're very predictable.
We'd be in the stands, you know, Washington, where we could literally call the next fucking, call the play.
Yeah. I mean, I did it a couple years when they were playing at TCU. I was with my Texas buddy, and I basically called every single play in the fourth quarter. Like I was probably hitting 75%. He's like, how did you know? How do you know this? And I'm like, it's Sark, man.
Like, we watched him for a long time.
We've lived it. We've lived it.
We have lived it. And so, yeah, this mentality, you might know more about this. I mean, Texas, I think, wanted Kawasaki fired just a couple years ago. Now he's the greatest thing ever. And Sark's unbeatable. It's truly amazing.
Yeah, they weren't happy year one with K. Like,
I think the first 2 years they weren't happy.
Yeah, and even last year they were kind of like, but you could at least see last year like it was evolving in the right direction. But and then the last thing that we didn't talk about on their offense is Ewers definitely can hold the ball too long, going back to what I was talking about in terms of being indecisive and whatnot. And, you know, if you look at the sack rates between Ewers and Penix, there's a massive difference. And so if you get pressure on Ewers, there's a pretty good chance that you get sacks on him. And I think one of the keys for us is, let's be honest, Texas is going to move the ball. That's going to happen.
Yeah.
But what's going to be critical is when we get the opportunity, whether it's a holding penalty or a sack or whatever, when we get them behind the chains, it is a definite opportunity for us to get off the field, because I do not like Ewers is probably the weakest quarterback in my mind of anybody in the playoffs. And so I think we have the opportunity to, you know, potentially bait him into a couple, you know, bad throws, you know, a strip sack, like you mentioned, Jimmy, not necessarily the most, you know, sturdy of guys in the pocket,
right?
When he gets hit. So, and he's also not that mobile. So
this is my crazy prediction, Tech. I mentioned it. I think maybe like after the Pac-12 championship game, Durfee is going to come in and get a sack in the first quarter, and it's going to knock Ewers out of the game.
Well, and what's crazy is like Durfee, nobody has film on him. Like there's no film.
No film.
But he's been talked up to the point where you know damn well that as soon as he comes on the field, everyone's going to be pointing to him, right? Like, hey, this is the Durfee guy, right? And all that's going to, like, I don't care whether he does anything or not, but if he's just drawing attention,
he's on the field.
Yes. If he's drawing the attention, that means somebody else isn't drawing attention. And that somebody else is going to make a play because of it. Because that's the type of shit, you know, like Sark's going to lose his shit about Durfee when he doesn't know whether Durfee can play or not, but he's just going to have heard all the shit. And they're going to, I guarantee they're not going to be like, oh, we're going to put Durfee one-on-one and let's see what he can do. Cause you know, if he goes out there on the first play and blows by a tackle or, you know, bull rushes him onto the, you know, ground or whatever, like they're going to be like, well, shit, we should have done, you know, like they're not going to want to be embarrassed like immediately by Durfee.
Well, yeah. Jesse, do we got questions? Because I'm
I know. I know this is going long, but hey, it's 60 minutes. Yeah, we're 60 minutes from the national championship game.
Hey, we don't get to this spot every day, so.
No, we don't.
Even though we all predicted it at the beginning of the year. shout out to us for being clairvoyant. Okay, do we actually believe Texas can stop UW's offense when we're healthy? Because no one has yet. Barring injury, what do you think the realistic floor is for UW scoring? And yeah, I'll just point out a lot of these national, you know, non-local expert people, like they're not pointing out, hey, Jalen McMillan is now back and healthy. UW's offense is 100% healthy again. Like no one's pointing that out.
Yeah. Big deal. That's a huge deal.
Yeah.
It
so
changes
do you,
total complexion. Yeah.
Yeah. So do you believe that Texas can actually stop this offense?
No, I don't. It'd stop us. No, it'd stop this offense. I don't think so. I mean, a few things. You looked at the, you know, the Kansas State game. You know, they were down, but they came back by throwing the ball. Houston threw the ball. You know, this team can be thrown on. And Penix in sync with his guys dropping. He's going to be throwing passes that the Texas defense hasn't seen all year. They're going to see routes. They're going to see ball placement that they haven't faced since they played Penix last year. And in that game last year, I'm sure Grubbs thought about it. You know, we were pushing the ball a lot. And then when we decided to settle in and chip away, what did we do? You know, we went, what was that, a 90-yard drive in like 6-7 minutes? I mean, I feel like offensively we're going to do whatever we want in the sense of, you know, when the shots are there, he's going to take them. They're going to see ball placement they haven't faced. You know, to Grubb's point, which I'm going to go and watch that, but they're going to make them run. This team physically and, you know, condition-wise has played so well. And if it's true about Texas fading in games because of, you know, conditioning or whatnot, are these bigger linemen getting tired out? I mean, that's definitely going to be a factor in this game.
So what's the realistic for our scoring then? I would say 28 to 30.
Oh, I think we're going to score. You know, what's our cap? Like, what, how many points do you think we're going to score in this game?
Well, just what is the realistic
floor? Yeah. Okay. Sorry. Yeah. I'm with you on that.
It's
it's
probably the 27 we scored last year.
Yeah. Yeah. I would agree.
Agree. Same question for you, Tech. I mean, do you believe Texas can stop this offense if now that we're fully healthy?
I think Texas is going to do exactly the same thing they did last year. I think in their mind, they're going to sit there and they're going to say, we gave up 27 last year.
Mm-hmm.
If we can do that again this year, our offense will do better and we'll win.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I just am kind of laughing at it because the ways that we can hurt you, it goes back to like what I was talking about towards the beginning. You tell us what you want to take away and we'll do other things. Okay, you want to tell me your D line's really good. Okay, well here's my counter to it. We're gonna leave the tackles on an island. We're gonna play 3 versus 2 on the interior. We'll probably have Dylan Johnson inside to block. We might chip one of your better end with Westover. Cool. And oh, by the way, Westy's gonna get that little delay, you know, little slant arrow type that always goes for 10 yards. Okay, well, easy play, cool. Let's move on. If you go back to last year's game, we completed 32 balls. 12 of them were to tight ends and running backs. Mm-hmm. How often do we have that ratio? Not often. But if you tell us that's what you're going to give us, we'll take it. Like, that's the problem when you play us, is that you can sit there and you put all the safeties that you want back. And by the way, Texas is missing one of their defensive backs for the first half for targeting in the Big 12 title game. So, you know,
their best secondary player.
Yep. And so, like, I think you can take it to the bank that they are going to play that first half is no shots. We're not going to give up anything over the top. Okay, cool. We'll hit you with the tight ends. We'll hit you with the wide receiver screens. We'll hit you with the tunnel screens. We'll hit you with the little quick outs. Well, because everything Texas is going to do is we're not going to take shots, right? So, clear out receivers, have somebody come underneath, easy situation. Texas talks all the time about, like, all you hear about them, oh, we're so much better on third down. Well, why are you good on third down? It's because in the Big 12, a lot of people want to run the football. You're good at stopping the run up the middle. So by default, you're in third and long a lot. You should get off the field.
Yeah, they're 26%.
But you're not going to be in, like, number one, how often are you going to be in third and long with Washington when we're probably going to be able to pick you apart a little bit? Because it's not like you're going to be playing press coverage on our guys.
No.
You know, and like you said earlier, Jimmy, the way we release is unique and different. It's in a lot of ways, it's nuanced. It's not like what Chip Kelly was doing when he changed everything, it felt like. But what we're doing in the passing game is kind of like revolutionizing how you think about it. And it's, I'm not going to say it's akin to what Oregon was doing with Chip Kelly, but there's some elements of it where, how often do you see, like, when you watch us play, do we have two receivers against one safety?
Yep.
And yep. You're looking because we cross responsibilities. We cross, we're constantly putting defenders in positions where, regardless of what choice they make, they're damned if they do and they're damned if they don't. And, you know, I can tell you that the passing games in the Big 12 are not that sophisticated. They just really aren't. And, you know, this will be by far the most complex that they've seen. And they will do everything in their power to make sure that they don't get beat over the top. And it will be our job and our responsibility to basically execute what they give us and then force them eventually to get out of it. Because, you know, just like they say, it's demoralizing to have teams just run the ball down the field on you. It's also pretty damn demoralizing when, you know, teams go on 15 play drives and they're, you know, hitting 6 yard, 7 yard passes every single play on you too. So, you know, let me go
to the next question, if that's okay.
Next question,
because there's three or four more really good ones that I want to get to. Okay, which player will have the biggest impact for UW that nobody's really talking about?
Westover.
I like it. I was leaning Westover, and I'm also thinking Bernard.
Yep. Yeah, particularly in the red zone. You know, when you're thinking, okay, we're going to want to run people sideline to sideline. How often do we run jet sweeps with him? How often, you know, and I guarantee he's not somebody that's showing up on their scouting report, right? Like, they're worried about Johnson. They're worried about the three receivers getting pressure on Penix.
Yeah, I think
Westover ain't on it, and Bernard ain't on that list. Like,
and look, they might sneak out Giles Jackson there, you know.
100%.
Kind of sneak him in there nonchalantly and have something dialed up for him.
Jimmy, I don't know if you noticed this back in the Pac-12 title game, but there were a couple plays where Westover was effectively lining up as the tailback just simply for pass protection up the middle.
I did notice that once.
Yeah. So, like, I could see that happening a couple times, right? Or we move it, you know, like I was saying earlier, where he's getting the chip and you're sliding the protection into the interior. Like, there's a lot of different ways that even if Westover isn't necessarily catching the ball, and it's the same with Dylan Johnson, like, forget, like, his yardage and whatnot. Arguably, his best attribute is his pass blocking in terms of the success of the offense. Like,
yeah, he's elite.
Absolutely nails at that.
He's an elite blocker.
Yep.
Yeah, I'm going to
go on Sunday.
I'm going to go with Durfee.
Yeah.
It seems like people are only talking about the offense.
Defensively, I'll throw Carson Bruner out there.
You guys are really good at this. But yeah, defensively, I do want to pick Trice, but I think Trice is going to, I think he could potentially have his best game of his career on Monday.
Yeah, you've been pointing that out all season, Jimmy, and that's important because if Trice has a huge, I mean, he can be a bit, I'm not going to say a game wrecker, but that guy can be a game changer on defense.
Oh, absolutely.
Like if he has a really good team and he gets a sack or a couple hits on Ewers, you know, that can disrupt their offense.
And just one thing that we haven't talked about up to this point, one of the biggest keys for us is obviously containing their running game. And, you know, we've had a month of basically healing time for Thule up the middle. And
yeah,
you know, I don't care about his tackle numbers or whatnot, but, you know, if we have a healthy Thule that's able to play 2/3 of the snaps and particularly on rundowns, that is a massive situation for us.
Yeah, Thule is really good. Like, people don't realize how good he is.
Yeah. There's a massive difference when he plays and when he doesn't play.
Yep. Absolutely.
We want okay. Next question. Sorry, Jimmy. UW wins if they can do what? Will Coach K change his defensive game plan up from the Alamo Bowl and bring more pressure and not just stick with too high safety? So let's go with the first one first. UW wins if they can do what?
Avoid turnovers.
Yeah, that's the old Dick Baird. That's a Dick Baird, you know. Dick Baird truth right there. Yeah.
I'm going to say, it's either one of these two things. One, we run the ball really well. Mm. Or Trison just getting pressure on defense.
Yeah, and I think, you know, the run game obviously is extremely important. And if we get a good effort out of the run game, it's going to be really hard for Texas. But, you know, I think they're going to frustrate Texas with some shorter, you know, route running with McMillan. And they're going to give Rome, you know, those screen plays in the middle of the field that's going to cause problems. They're just going to see some stuff they just haven't faced. And, you know, we execute and we're in rhythm and, you know, Penix is on target. They're just going to be really, it's going to be tough for Texas. They're going to put a lot of pressure on Texas.
Yeah. If I'm going to not do the Dick Baird, I think what's really, I think Texas needs an easy score or two to win, but, I would say the other thing that I would say is, pay attention early to our tempo, and it's not necessarily how fast we're running plays, but what's critical is that we're picking up positive yards each play, mm-hmm. and then our ability to get to the line of scrimmage. Because if we're able to do that and put Texas in a position where they're not able to sub, doesn't matter if we run a play like immediately or if we shift our formations three different times before we snap a ball. The reality is we're making those defensive tackles have put their hand in the ground and anticipate a snap over a 25-second period, and they don't know exactly when it's coming. You want to wear those guys out. Yes, there's the running sideways and playing quick and whatnot, 100% on that. But the other way to do it is just it where they can't get off the field. And that will take a lot out of them. And obviously, you know, I'm sure there will be instances where we will want to play, you know, fast and whatnot. But if we're throwing incompletions and whatnot, it's a lot easier to sub on an incompletion, even if you do get back up to the line of scrimmage, than it is in a normal situation. So that would be something I would look for.
I don't know if we had to. Does Coach Kwiatkowski change his defensive game plan? The Alamo Bowl.
I don't think initially he does. I think if he changes, it's going to be because we've executed well, we've executed in the red zone, and Texas has got to the point of realizing that we will beat them by 1,000 paper cuts if they allow us to. And then at that point, then I think you probably do start seeing things, and then that's where you know, I think the shots come.
Okay. Thoughts on the players portraying immense confidence in the pressers.
I love it.
I mean, that's what you expect, but I also don't think they said anything really inflammatory. I mean, I think we can go back to the pressure of finishing 12-0 and everything that culminated in the Apple Cup, and, you know, everyone making a big deal of Penix putting his head in that box, and that there was incremental pressure throughout the year as the wins mounted and they hit a fever pitch. They got that out of their system. This is go time. This team is not
what they all came back for.
It's what they all, I mean, Penix said they wanted to be, they came back to be legendary. And when Penix is doing his presser, you know, Odunze's dancing in the corner and he's laughing. I mean, look, man, these guys are letting it rip. I just don't feel like they've said anything that's outlandish, but they're confident, as they should be.
Yeah.
They should be confident. No one's beaten them for 20 flipping games.
I'm getting the same vibe, Jimmy, that I had going into Vegas. You know, it's the, What do we have to do to prove to you that, you know, we're actually as good as, you know, like,
we're good.
Have you ever seen a program win 20 games in a row get less respect?
No, absolutely not.
You know, you have an offensive line that has won the Joe Moore Award, and all they hear is how they won't be able to block.
Yep.
Texas's D line. And by the way, Texas's edges, they're not that great. Like, they're decent, but they're more pedestrian than they are elite.
Yeah.
So it's really the guys on the inside. And, you know, obviously great defensive tackles are awesome, but you know what? That guy down at SC, the transfer in from Georgia, he was supposed to be all that.
Yep.
I barely remember even hearing his name announced like more than twice in that game.
Same with Jonah Ellis at Utah.
Yeah, he was nothing. I mean, Oregon's defensive line, I mean, they've got dudes. Like,
I mean,
Doros is a dude.
Brock said Oregon's D-line is an NFL front. I mean, they got they got guys that are, you know, they're big athletic D-line. Yeah.
So, like, but, you know, I mean, it doesn't matter that, you know, we won an award for the best O-line in the country. It's, you can't stop that. It's, you can't run on them. Well, you don't even understand how we run the ball. So forget that. Oh, how are your defense is like 122nd against the pass because you're a dinosaur and use passing yards. Well, no shit. We're always ahead. So what are you going to do against us? Throw the ball. Congratulations.
I mean,
our rate stats are awesome.
Utah. Yeah.
You know, like, cool. But our rate stats are better than Texas when it comes to throwing the ball. Like, you know, it's just no matter how you slice it, it's, you know, outside of the people that really are digging in deep, it's just like Booger McFarland. Oh, you're just not tough enough.
Yeah. Can't play big boy
Booger. Football. Get fucked. Like, take your SEC ass and, you know, pound sand. Like, you know, it's just, I've never seen a team doubted and disrespected more for the success that they've had. And I know if I was in that position, I would be livid pissed. I would have the biggest chip on my shoulder and I would want to go pound a mud hole right in someone's ass that I'm lining up against.
Yeah, someone asked Penix, he's like, well, what do you think about the crowd noise? He's like, I've covered Saints games and when they're on defense, it's insanely loud. How do you, you know, how are you going to cope with the crowd? He's like, well, we played Texas in Texas at the Alamo Bowl last year.
Oh, that's the other one. It's like, oh, it's a home game. Okay, well, San Antonio is a hell of a lot closer than New Orleans.
Yeah.
And, you know, and maybe I'm wrong on this, but, you know, I think as a program, we understand that we're in Southern Alaska. I think we understand that, you know, we're proud and we travel, but we're probably not going to travel as much as other people, particularly at this time of the year, just because there's nothing close to us unless we're in Pasadena or in Phoenix.
Yeah.
But you know what? I think we enjoy taking on that role. And I think we, you know, our players relish going on the road and winning. I think our fans understand that, you know, it might be 70-30 or whatever, but you know what? Our 30% is going to make as much noise as your 70% because we understand that that's just part of the deal. And, you know, you can either complain about it or you buck up.
They don't give a shit about the crowd, man. They love it.
The chip on the shoulder, like that actually really works.
There's two types of people, Chess. There's people that, you know, when shit gets hard and, you know, they fold, right? And then there's, you know, but the greats, though, you know, like, you think Michael Jordan liked playing at home or on the road more? It was play on the road because he wanted to shut everybody up.
Yeah.
Right? Like, if you want to be great in sports, you have to embrace wanting to go into somebody else's building and just smiling at them at the end of the day and just being like, I'm better than you. So,
bring it. All right, Chest.
Next question.
Let's get this rolling.
I think we have one more. Do you think the pundits have actually watched a UW game, or are they just checking the past recruiting ranks when they write off UW?
I definitely think there's an element of that for sure. You know, we always talk about the time difference and ESPN and all that BS. So yeah, there's a lot of people I don't think they've seen Washington. They look at box scores. They look at, like you said, they look at dinosaur stats. Oh, it's Texas. They get the attention. You know, it's Sarkisian was in Saban's halfway house for a few years. He's a different man. You know, he's cleaned up his act. He coached with the best. He's learned from the best. You know, it's late, like we said, lazy reporting. Everything, anything mainstream is lazy and usually just loser mentality, loser effort, you know, just laziness. I mean, journalism as a whole has gone down the shitter, and that goes with football and who's covering it now. And they want to hit the high points on TV and spoon feed you bullshit. So, you know, like that Byron Murphy said, 7:45, we'll see you there. Because Dylan Johnson said he played in the SEC, and that's a slight on Texas. I mean, fuck, I mean, give me
hey, newsflash, Texas. Guess where you're going to be next year?
Yeah.
In the SEC.
Yeah. So
and I guarantee you, those schools that Dylan Johnson mentioned, yeah, they can't wait to pound your ass. they're going to welcome you to the SEC with open arms.
Yeah, it's just funny to me. It's just funny to me.
It's, I mean, for me, Jimmy, it's just, you know, people look at stats as the end all be all, but I mean, stats just like tell a result, right? Like you're not going to understand things unless you actually look at film. It's, you know, why did Washington beat Oregon twice this year when, if you look at any metric, Oregon stats were better than Washington's?
Yep.
Well, it's because matchups matter, right? Like, you know, how you perform in tight situations matters. Like, there's a lot of intangibles that are on the table that you don't find in a stat. Like, it doesn't, you know, it's not a one for one. I think one of the biggest things that, you know, as a whole, everyone's going to be struggling with, not only right now, but probably for the next few years, is, you know, for so long, all we've been conditioned about is recruiting rankings, right? You know, it's the blue chip ratio. It's the, you know, whatever you want to, you know, underwear Olympics. Okay, well, that's great. You know, Chess, I think you pointed this out on Twitter. Washington has 9 sixth-year players on their roster and 30 fifth-year or sixth-year players. When you look at just the sixth-year players, we have 9. The other 3 teams combined have 3. I can tell you right now, I don't care how talented you are as a 19-year-old. Give me a damn good 23-year-old, and I'll take my chances every single day of the week. Because you're also a better player at 23 than you are at 19. I don't care how talented you are.
And we also have a total of 30. So there, yeah. I counted. There's 21.
35 50, plus,
so
right? Yeah.
Yeah. There's 30 fifth and sixth year players, basically. I wonder how that, I mean, that other stat is staggering, but the, you know, the 9, or what was it, 6, and the other teams have a combined 3.
We have 9 6-year players, and everybody else combined has 3.
Wow.
Oh, wow. Yeah. And then so if you throw in the 5th-year guys, it's 30.
Yeah.
So and those are significant. Like, those are all, like, I would say off the top, like 25 of those
most
guys,
of those guys are big players.
Yeah. They're significant contributors. It's not just guys that, like, you've never heard of.
You know, like, it's kind of funny because, like, you go back into the Wayback Machine, you know, it's like bitching about the advantages BYU would have, right? Like,
yeah.
You know, oh, they've got, you know, the 24-year-olds and we're playing with 20, 21-year-olds. Well, yeah, it makes a difference. Like, you know, but, you know, I mean, there's reasons we have that and others don't, and whatever, and that's fine. But, you know, in a world of the portal and in the world of, you know, how much do recruiting rankings even matter when that five-star you sign transfers after a year? Like, they don't matter. You know, it's, I don't think we're in a good spot where we really understand how to measure the talent on rosters, like we used to. And I don't think we understand how to properly evaluate players that are in their fourth and fifth year. I mean, obviously when we get out of the backlog of COVID, you know, 6 years players will go away, but you know, you're always going to be benefiting by having fourth and fifth year players on your roster comparatively to, you know, the true sophomore. I don't like awesome five-star guy. He's super talented, but he's inexperienced. That fourth and fifth year player, he's been there. He's done that. You know, he's going to pick up his reads and his keys faster. You know, and that might be the difference between an interception and not an interception. And, you know, small margins often win games at the highest level. And I just feel like a lot of people have missed that. I know our friends in Eugene miss that. but it's an issue. And, you know, however we've gotten lucky to get to where we are with our roster, I mean, the fact that we are experienced is a significant advantage for us.
All right, guys. One more very important question, then we can, I guess we'll do predictions. Do you think Kim Grinnell has a side job as one of the voice guys in porn videos?
No idea.
Maybe. I think he's in a seedy spot on Aurora on Friday and Saturday nights announcing Asia coming to the stage.
Well, we know he can't wait to see Sark, so he's into something.
I hope Sark blows him off. That would be one. That would make me hate Sark a little bit less.
By the way, how amusing is it? Like any interview Sark is, like he always is dropping like the sound bites of the sponsors and all that. Like he sounds like basically a glorified NASCAR driver. Yeah, it's just so full of platitudes and
yeah,
scripted, and it's just like
he was stroking Washington hard on some interview I watched. Oh, I have great memories there and blah blah, got my start, a lot of respect. It's like, no, you don't. No, you didn't.
No,
you're full of shit. You're lying. You're saying the shit because it sounds good. It's a good sound bite. It's totally true. It's like anybody understands this dude's past. He is not a genuine human being. There's nothing genuine. Nothing.
Yeah, and if you think he's changed, just watch that little clip of him before the game, the Alamo Bowl last year, where there was, you know, a secure, what do you call that? Like a get back guy or you're some guy.
He was just base dude. He was the guy to tell him when to
basically
run.
Basically tell him to go. Yeah.
Field.
Yeah.
He was waiting for the call. The guy had a headset on. He was waiting to tell them when they could go onto the field. I mean, it's insane.
Just look at Sark's face, how he reacted. I mean, what a fucking asshole. Like, that guy is not changed. He doesn't give a shit about anybody, you know, who doesn't have, like, high status in society.
The only guy he cared about at Washington in his career was Jake Locker and Chris Polk, and I know that for 110%. He didn't give a shit about 95% of that team.
Oh, because he viewed those guys as the guys that could get him to a place better than Washington.
Yep, 100%.
You know, and, you know, how he parlayed what he was doing at Washington to SC, I have no idea. But, you know, the dirty secret of the whole thing was, you know, Sark was working on his way to getting fired at Washington before he took the SC job.
He should have been fired after
13.
The WSU game.
Yep.
When they had the 10-point lead going in the 18-point lead going into the fourth quarter and lost the game. He should have been fired.
And just even if like I give Sark like everything that happened in the Alamo Bowl last year was out of character and he has changed and let's say that that's the case, then it goes back to everything Jimmy was talking about earlier of, but that was against Washington. So he's, you know,
yeah.
Best case scenario, we still rattle the shit out of him, right? Like, it's still in his head.
Yep.
You know, if he's still a piece of shit, he's still a piece of shit. But even if he's changed, you know, we still get in his head. So
let's go into the psychology. I mean, is there a reason? Does that just remind him about like what a piece of shit he was?
reminds him of what a fraud. What a fraud. Fraud. Empty fraud.
I think like when he plays us, like he has this desire to want to beat us to the point of it's like validation to him that he's better than what we are. And he puts so much pressure on himself to prove that, you know, we were the lucky ones.
Yeah.
That Sark gave us 5 years. We needed him. And then, you know, but like, well, we weren't good enough for him, but we were good. Like, we needed to beg him to come and turn us around. And then you have the assholes that credit, you know, Sark for all the success of coming out of 0-12, and, you know, which is, you know, I'll give like a little bit of credit to Sark, but
fucking,
well, he had a lot of NFL talent already built in.
Yeah. Like, let's also be honest. 0-12 was because Locker got hurt.
Yeah. People who say that, I just want to slap them silly. So disgusting.
It is. It's sickening. Yeah.
But anyway,
okay.
Let's move off of all that. All right. Let's do predictions. Tech, I'm going to make you go first.
All right. I think this game is going to go very similar to what we saw in Vegas. I think Washington is going to jump up and out to a pretty substantial first half lead. I suspect that Texas will, you know, come back at some point because it's just not our way to blow people out. But when it comes to the fourth quarter and it comes to making plays, I trust our offense to make plays and I trust our defense to make plays. And I trust both of them more than I trust anything of Texas being able to do it. And in large part, Jimmy, to what you were talking about, there's a lot of evidence this year that Texas kind of struggles towards the end of the game and they might make one play, but that one play they make is, like, they could have made 10 plays earlier in the game to wrap it up. And then, like, they finally do it on the 11th chance.
Yeah.
So I think it's going to be very similar where we get that second score in the last, let's say, 5 minutes of the fourth quarter. Now, whether Texas gets a late score like Oregon did to get it back to one score, I don't know. But I think it gets to, at some point, Washington 38-27, and then whether Texas gets it to 38-35 or whatever, I don't know. But I think that's where I'm leaning, something like that, 38-27, and then maybe a late score for Texas.
That's, yeah, that gets me pretty – I'm a little speechless. I mean, if that outcome comes, I'm going to be just – my jaw's going to hit the floor, and I love it. You know, I guess I'm next. Just, you know, yes. I wanted to go to this game. There's some circumstances where, you know, it just wasn't in the cards, and it came back around that I'm gonna attend and planning on Houston, and I feel like things need to be mentioned a little bit about, you know, the states of society and culture and what. It's rare that you have these moments where you can go into one place with so much energy, electricity, everyone's all in, they're all diehards at these games, everyone's totally into it. Because when I remembered 16, the electricity and the feel, like I want to experience that game. And there just aren't that many things in the life experience that can provide you that type of experience for 3 or 4 hours. Now, assuming if it was a blowout and the game was shit and the fourth quarter was a 25-point score, different story. But even that first 10 minutes, the build-up, it is like rare that you can have those types of experiences. So I cannot flip and wait for Monday because they don't come often. You know, obviously it's been 7 years since our last taste of a potential national championship. So I've been thinking a lot about this game and the score, and it's weird. I have a lot of confidence in this team. I get these slight moments of hesitation and doubt, but truly, I feel very good about this game. I don't know if I'm correctly, if I have the purple colored glasses and it's biased, that could be the case, but I do. I think Washington finds a way to win this game. I think it's going to be like 39-35, somewhere in that ballpark. I see us in that high 30s, and I see Texas in the mid 30s, and I see Washington taking this game. I think they win it. All the chips are in on Texas. They're the favorite. They have all the respect. Washington doesn't have the respect. And I go back to Penix, DeBoer, and Grubb, man. And my belief in this defense taking a step forward again. All those intangibles that Tech mentioned, I think we have the better special teams. I just think we are the better team, and we're not recognized for being so. And I think it propels them to a victory.
Man, both you guys, those are incredible predictions. I love the detail. I just can't do it. I can't make
it. I know you can't. Sorry.
I can't. I can't. I'm just too in my own head. I'm sorry, guys. I can't. And how can I even follow? Like, what? I mean, you guys should be on TV. I mean,
oh man, you're too kind, buddy. Yeah, I get it, Chest. You know, no prediction needed. You know, Tech and I took care of it. We're giving the prediction everybody wants to hear.
Yeah, you don't get the quick score prediction for a semifinal game. You know. You get the 10-star review for the semifinal.
That's right. That's right. I think it all comes together for this team. Now, can I guarantee a victory? I cannot guarantee it, but I feel pretty damn confident. And you know what's crazy, guys, is like the Boys in the Boat movie comes out this year. The way this team has won all year, the pieces that we have, the players, the coaches, the end of the Pac-12, you know, beating the greatest, that, you know, Oregon was positioned to be the national champion, you know, that they were going for the national title run. There's just so many interesting pieces to this season. They're not ready to be denied. This team is not ready to be denied.
Yeah, I mean, Jimmy, for me, it comes back to, I feel better about this game than I did the Pac-12 title game in Vegas.
Yep.
The more film I watched of Texas, the more that I came away with the opinion that Oregon had a better team than Texas. And like you, you know, sports happens, and you know, anyone that says that this stage of the world that you can predict anything with certainty is fooling themselves. But I do firmly believe that had Oregon been in this Final Four, they would be very, very competitive with anybody that's there besides us, right? And so that's what gives me the confidence, is knowing we've had two of those games this year. We've won them both. And the last time we played, we arguably played our best game of the season. And I don't,
we should have won by more than three.
Yeah. I don't care what the final score is. Like,
we smashed.
You know, the reality is the only stat that matters is, do you have more points than the other team at the end of the game? And that's it. Like,
understand too, this team, it doesn't get talked about enough. This team is ultra competitive.
Yep.
Ultra. And don't let it fool you, DeBoer and Grubb are ultimate competitors, man. They are alphas. They are killers.
Oh, you know, Jimmy, that like all month, all that's been playing in that, you know, in that locker room is, you guys aren't tough enough. You guys aren't this. You aren't that. Like, why do you think our guys are sick? Because that's all they've been hearing, right?
When they talk, when he mentioned the D lineman to Penix, he just gave this like little, no, you know, expression like
it was annoying. Like,
here we go again.
Yep.
It's all about the other team and how great they are.
Yep.
And look, it's little old Washington. How are they going to compete against Texas?
Yep.
Yeah, this is, and not to belabor, but this is not Georgia's D line from last year or 2 years ago. Like, if there was a D line, like, that's a D line we could be concerned about, but like, not this one.
Look, and they've given them credit. I mean, Penix said in the presser, like, dude, this is a good D line. They play good ball. They are good. He's aware of it. He's like, we also have a great offensive line.
I mean,
what, I don't understand what the issue is with these comments. They're not saying anything that's outlandish in any respect.
The slights are Dylan Johnson saying, well, you know, I played Alabama and Georgia. Okay, well, that's actually factual, so whatever. And then Penix saying, well, they're not the 49ers or the Eagles.
Yeah, I mean,
like,
he's comparing them against amazing D-lines. And Dylan Johnson, you could take that as a compliment. He's putting you up there with Bama and Georgia.
Yeah. You know, and I get it. Texas, you know, Texas needs to, you know, find things to put the chip on the shoulder. But I think that goes to tell you where their mindset is versus where ours is, right? Like, we have that quiet confidence, and we have a history of people doubting us. And it's just like, okay, well, let's just go prove it again. Whereas, you know, to the point that you were making earlier, Jimmy, there's a confidence with Texas where, you know, they think their shit doesn't stink. This is on brand for how Texas acts when they're good. And, you know, obviously everybody plays a little better with a chip on their shoulder, but what's happening is Texas is having to try to manufacture that chip on the shoulder. That doesn't normally work out quite as well, right? Like,
yeah,
you know, cause you don't necessarily believe it. You're not all in on it. Like, you know, but whatever, like, you know, I told one of my Texas buddies, I was like, hey, if Sweat wants to take his 360 pounds and, you know, go balls to the wall on snap one, bring it, because he won't be there in the fourth quarter if he's going to play, you know, with his pants on fire the entire game. Like, won't happen.
Nope.
So I'll take my chances. You know,
all right, and dudes, we got to, I'm sorry to cut you off. No, I got to get ready to catch a plane. So,
yeah.
Well, we got to get you to New Orleans, man.
Yeah.
Well, Tech, I hope you make a last,
I will at least look into it. I'm definitely, assuming we get to Houston, I'll be, you know, moving everything, to get there. But, I did the semis last year. I did it in 16. Not saying that I'm taking it for granted, but I figure this year, if I'm going to take one swing, it's going to the title game. So
that's right.
You know, let's whole Winter Classic thing doesn't come around too often either. So
hey, you got to always pick your spots.
Your spots.
All right, fellas, that was great, man.
All right,
let's get it done.
Yeah. Great job, gentlemen. We'll have to do this again in a week.
Absolutely.
Yes. Right. Yes, we will.
Go Dogs, everyone.
Go Dogs.
Go Dogs.
I'm just looking for the end recording button.
You get this bonus time.
That's going to be.